WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Ice Cube was one of the originators of gangster rap. With the group N.W.A., he made one of the most influential albums in rap history, Straight Outta Compton. Many of Ice Cube's lyrics were about gangs, drive-bys, and confrontations with the police in South Central L.A. His career has since taken some unpredictable turns. He now has a film production company that made the family comedy Are We There Yet?, which he starred in. His company also made the Friday movies and the Barbershop movies. Our interview was recorded last January. We played some music with lyrics some listeners might find offensive. Ice Cube, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
If someone said to you in the 1980s when you were first getting famous as a gangster rapper that in 2005 you were going to be producing and starring in a movie in which you got subjected to every indignity imaginable by a couple of really obnoxious children, what would you say?
I would have told them they was crazy. You know, all I wanted to do was rap back then. I had no other ambitions but to, you know, get my songs played on the radio, you know, and here I am. You know, it's been a roller coaster ride of a career for me, and it's fun and it's still kind of evolving. So, you know, I wouldn't have believed you back then.
When was the first time you heard rap? I mean, how old were you? What were you listening to when you first heard it?
The first rap song I heard was Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang, 1979.
That's pretty much the beginning of recorded rap.
Pretty much, yeah. I was 10 years old, and I was on my way to the dentist. My uncle was taking me, and he had a big radio that he would play because his car radio didn't work. And he had this one song on it. He had, you know, the Ohio Players. He had Rick James, the Commodores. And then this one song came on, which was Rapper's Delight. And it just blew my mind that, you know, people were saying what I considered nursery school rhymes to music, and it was something that just captivated me.
Now, you grew up in South Central.
Yes.
What was the neighborhood you were from like when you were a kid?
My neighborhood was the thing about Los Angeles is very unpredictable, and it's, you know, the streets are nice, the lines are manicured, and, you know, and it's this big gang culture that always was, you know, like a bad storm that never kind of went away, that was kind of always looming. You know, whether it was raining or not, it was still looming. So you always had a mixture of talented people, sports people, you know, gangsters. You know, it was always that mix. And, you know, 80% of the time it was cool, but 20% of the time, you know, it was hell. So as a kid, you always thought about that 20% of the time, no matter how much fun you was having. So in looking back at it, it's really only added to my life. You know, it's only added to my character and my strength growing up in South Central Los Angeles.
I want to play one of the famous N.W.A. records. Mm-hmm. And this is Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
You're rapping. You wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about it before we hear it? This became like a signature rap.
Yeah. I mean, Straight Outta Compton was us trying to scream to the world kind of what we were living, going through, how we felt. For rappers, a lot of rappers will say that doing the music is a great stress reliever. It relieves tension. It's a way to take your anger, frustrations, your ego, and kind of give it a form. And, you know, that's what it was for us. It's kind of us kind of screaming at the top of our lungs, not only what's going on in the neighborhood, but the ego that's a part of rap. You know, a lot of people don't realize ego, bravado,
mm-hmm.
It's a part of the music. you really, you know, it's as essential as rhyming to a certain extent. You know, that's what this is. This is to tell the world where we coming from and how we coming, and to be warned, because we were the world's most dangerous group.
And here it is, straight out of Compton. This is N.W.A. with my guest, Ice Cube.
Niggas without a chicken. Niggas without a chicken. Niggas without a chicken.
I'm coming straight out of Compton. When something happens in South Central Los Angeles, nothing happens. It's just another nigga dead, 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 dead.
Straight out of Compton, crazy mother named Ice Cube. From the gang called Niggas with Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze a trigger and bodies are hauled off. You too, boy, if you with me, the police are gonna have to come and get me off your ass. That's how I'm going out. For the punk mother that's showing out. Niggas start to mumble, they wanna rumble. Makes a man cook them in a pot like gumbo. Going off on the mother.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of Compton.
That's Ice Cube in his days with N.W.A. That's from the late 1980s, Straight Outta Compton. And Ice Cube is starring in a movie that he just produced, which is called Are We There Yet? It's a family comedy. You sang about the gangster lifestyle. How much did you become an actual part of that?
You know, I don't think you can grow up in the neighborhood without being a part of it to a certain extent, especially in Los Angeles, because wherever you're from, wherever your mother house was the gang you were from, whether you wanted to or not. You know, I'm gonna put it like this. Every day, you never knew what degree you was gonna participate, because every day was different. So some days, you know, I was heavily involved. Some days I just wasn't feeling it. The older I got, the less I would want to deal with that, because it was so many other things that I was into, which was music, sports, mm-hmm. you know, but it was just all around. You know, my neighborhood was kind of saturated with gangster, gangbang, and crack. But it's also saturated with family living, good times, playing ball on the street. It was like both.
So you were in a gang?
I don't like to say that, because, you know, me, I wasn't a active gang member. I didn't go out and kill nobody, mm-hmm. shoot nobody, or rob nobody, because that wasn't what I was about. And if in the neighborhood, you know, I've picked up an AK before and was willing to use it. Thank God I didn't have to. So, you know, it was just kind of a situation where you had to be ready to do anything.
When you say you were willing to use it, what was the circumstance?
You know, it was a circumstance where somebody had kind of tricked my mother out of some money, you know, and I knew that, you know, this person was heavily on drugs, and they kind of used her kindness and him knowing me as a way to, you know, to get money. And it was a small amount of money, but it was the principle behind it. And, you know, at that time in my life, you know, I really didn't think about the big picture. And, you know, we was pretty mad, you know, looking for the guy. And, you know, we went to his house. He wasn't there. And, you know, I'm glad he wasn't there, because my whole life would have been different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
What'd your mother think of this? What'd your mother think of knowing that you were willing to take a gun to...
Oh, she didn't know. Uh-huh. She didn't know nothing about it.
What'd you think about the kind of rapping that you were doing? Did she feel like this is a bad influence on you. You're singing about things that are dangerous. You're hanging out with the wrong people. Did she worry that this was leading you in the wrong direction?
No, she was happy that I was rapping and not
doing it,
killing, right. Hanging out on the corner, doing what all my friends was doing. She was glad that I had something other to do, to go to the studio. And, you know, so the profanity and the lyrics and everything that we were saying, you know, that was a piece of cake, you know, compared to what other mothers was going through in the neighborhood. Funerals, prison visits, school, you know, just bad things happening in school, or just mothers who were going with kids with a big, bad drug problem. So, you know, she didn't care what I was rapping about, just as long as I had a mic in my hand and not a gun.
Now, I've read that when you were young, your father was very strict.
Mm-hmm.
Did he not allow you to curse in the house?
Well, you know, you know, he was the only one that can curse in the house. He just demanded a lot of respect. And he demanded for kids to respect adults. And we did. You know, thank God he was still there. You know, I got a story that, you know, a lot of people don't have, which is the story of a mother and father raising them. And, you know, I was just glad he was there. So he's the biggest influence on my life to this day, as far as how to be a man, how to handle your business, how to play with the cards that's dealt. Don't complain about it.
Did your parents work at UCLA?
Yeah, they were custodians at UCLA, both my parents. And my father was a groundskeeper.
My guest is Ice Cube. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ice Cube, one of the originators of gangster rap. He's starred in several films and has his own movie production company. You have a performing career as well as a music career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of rappers, kind of like a lot of people in every genre of music, are kind of one-hit wonders, or they have their moment of fame, and then it's kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to get a day job, or you know, you just lose track of what's happened to them. But you, mm-hmm. you've been one of the really successful people. You have your own production company. You've starred in a lot of movies. I mean, you're doing terrifically. And it sounds like you have a lot of creative control, too, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is very gratifying. How did you start making movies? I mean, how did you first make that transition from rap to film?
It's about 1989. NWA, we had just released our records. They were big. I was on tour and just kind of engulfed in the moment. And a youngster, a couple of years younger than me, kind of walked up and said, "Hey, yo, you know, I think we might be the same age." But he said, "Yo, man, I got this movie. You'll be perfect for it." And I'm a junior at USC, and I'm gonna try to get it made, man. And I want you to star in it.
This would be John Singleton.
This is John Singleton. You know, I'm looking at him. I'm like, yeah, right. Whatever, man. So he sees me a year later. This is after I broke out with NWA, broke off the group, and was kind of going solo. And he said, "Yo, I'm a senior at USC, man. And still got that movie." And I'm like, "Yeah, I remember you." Blew him off again, and then later on that year, I got a script, and my manager said, "A script came in for you. They want you to read for it." And I said, "What is it?" "Some script called Boys in the Hood." I said, "All right, whatever." She gave it to me. I just put it up, and I said, "When do you want me to read?" And, you know, I'm trying to make a long story short. She said, "Going on Wednesday." So I went in, and I saw the guy. I'm like, "Oh, this is your movie." He said, "Yeah, did you read it?" I said, "No." He said, "Man, go read my movie and come back and, you know, and I'm going to give you a shot. If you want to do it, tell me you don't want to do it." So I went and read it, got it. You know, this is my neighborhood. This is history of my life in Los Angeles. I have to do this. So, you know, from then on, it's kind of kicked it off. And Boys in the Hood was the first movie I ever did and, you know, got nominated for an Oscar. And, you know, it was just a hell of a ride. We went to Cannes Film Festival and I just got bit by the bug from there and kind of wanted to be a part of good movies.
Now, obviously, you've become something of a businessman, too, because if you have your own production company, that's having to deal with the business end. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who become suddenly famous and wealthy when they're young can't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
What was that early period like for you when you were hit with fame and money and you had to figure out how to handle it?
You know, you go through the point where you're happy that you can do some of the things that you always wanted to do, buy some of the things you always wanted to buy. And then I think you hit a point where you feel that people are using you, you
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm.
even close to you, you know, family members, friends, you know, everybody wants to borrow, everybody wants to use. And you get to a point where you feel like I'm helping everybody. Nobody's helping me. And if I sink, then I'm going to be the one that everybody talk about. He had money and he lost all his money, but never talk about how they contribute to you losing your money. So I just started, you know, making people come correct and be genuine. And if they wasn't, they wouldn't get nothing from me. And, you know, you just have to kind of, you know, back people off, you know, to be able to breathe and to be able to kind of see clear and figure out who's really in your corner.
Did you go through a period of being like really ostentatious with the money? Just like buying things to show that would show your success?
Nah, I was never like that. You know, my father instilled in me that, you know, the car don't make the man, the clothes don't make the man, the jewelry don't make the man make the man, you know. Why would you have somebody looking at your car more than they looking at you, you know? So those kind of things always stuck with me. Don't, you know, you are the shining light, you know, not what trinket you can buy.
Is your father still alive?
Yeah.
He must be pretty proud of you.
He say, I'm living the life of Riley. That's what he say about himself. So he pretty cool. You know, he's been working all his life, you know, hardworking man, just retired, you know. And, you know, I've been spoiling him rotten, you know, because, hey, why not? You know, I got it. He shouldn't have to worry about it. So, yeah, I've been trying to spoil my father rotten.
And one of the many controversies surrounding gangster rap has been, is it bad for young people to be exposed to this? Are gangster rappers bad role models and so on? As a father, and you have children ranging from 4 to 17 now, do I have the ages right?
Yes. 4 to 18.
For 18. Mm-hmm. What was your approach to how much you should expose them to gangster rap and to your own records?
Well, you know, I believe you're not going to be there with your kids through everything they hear and everything they listen to. You know, what's worked for me is instilling in my kids a level of self-respect. And in doing that, it's kind of helped them through all these situations, through all this, you know, to weed through the music, the movies, the magazines, the news, you know, because it's some horrific stuff that's even shown on the news. So I've just kind of given them a balance of not hiding anything from them, but trying to explain everything to them. Explain to them show business, writing songs, producing songs, what it's really all about.
How did you explain profanity to them?
I explain profanity as language. There's language. There's good language, so-called, and there's so-called bad language. But it's all an expression of people. And there's appropriate times to use any kind of language. You know, kids, if you tell them don't use profanity, they'll say, okay. But when they get on the playground with their kids, you know, cuss like sailors. Just like I did when I was a kid, and you probably did when you were. So that's unrealistic. What's realistic is have respect. You know, an adult should never hear you say these words. You know, if you want to use these words around your friends, you know, that's really on you.
Can I ask you one dumb question?
Please.
This is very dumb.
Okay.
Do you think of yourself as being Ice Cube or Ice Cube, or does it does it matter?
I don't know. What was the difference between Ice Cube and Ice Cube?
Where the emphasis is on the first or the last word, and if it's Ice Cube, it really sounds like the Ice Cube, and if it's Ice Cube, I don't know. I've never.
All my friends call me Cube.
Okay.
You know, if you know me real good, call me Cube. I'll respond to that, but I don't know. I think I'll debate that.
Whether I'm overthinking
Ice Cube
this.
Or I'm Ice Cube.
I've obviously overthought this. Thank you so much.
All right.
Ice Cube recorded last January. Our Hip Hop Week continues tomorrow.